The Money Show.
Ad feature.
With Andy Rice.
I saw this yesterday and did a double take. Nike, the shoemaker, is 50 years old. 50 years ago, I mean, most people, and certainly in South Africa, hadn't heard of Nikes. It was all North Stars. And I think Adidas was quite big and Puma was quite big because they were run by rival brothers. Nike wasn't a thing in South Africa for a long time. Andy Rice, Nike at 50. What a wonderful success story for a brand that truly has gone global.
That's right, Bruce, with the odd hiccup along the way, but overall an extraordinary achievement. It was on May the 1st, 1972, that a company called Blue Ribbon Sports, run by one Phil Knight, who were distributors of footwear, sports footwear in the States, were told by Onitsuka, who are the parent Japanese manufacturer of the brand Tiger Asics, or just Asics to some people, that they no longer wanted to use Phil Knight's company for distribution of their shoes. So, as you said, it's basically from that day we were on our own. And they thought, well, this is the moment. This is the moment we've been waiting for, our moment, no more working for someone else. And so they started Nike then, 1st of May, 1972. Early days, difficult, you know, driving around with a boot full of shoes, selling them rather like the old Reg Lascaris story, selling them out of the back of the car, and slowly, slowly building up a reputation and a true brand. If you want case studies of what a real brand is, i.e. it's the way people feel about a product, then I don't think you need to look much beyond Nike, because you know, they I believe, you can correct me on this, Bruce, if I'm wrong, but I believe they don't manufacture a single shoe themselves. Like so many other global companies, they contract out to third parties the actual manufacture. So Phil Knight and Nike management team are responsible for the positioning, for the communication, for the design, obviously, but not the manufacture. And that, of course, almost bit them in the bum when they were being investigated for dubious labor employment practices in certain countries. But they got through that. They learned their lesson, I think. And wow, what a company now with a logo that's worth Lord knows how much. It cost them $35.
It did, didn't it? I mean, if you read Shoe Dog, which is Phil Knight's biography, and it comes on regularly on my LinkedIn profile as one of the greatest business biographies ever written. And yes, the designer was paid $35. I bet they wish they'd said, you know what, don't pay me anything. Just give me 1 cent for every shoe you sell, and we'll call it quits. And he would have done much better.
Well, in fact, it was a woman called Carolyn Davidson who was the designer. And of course, when she was given the brief, Nike was hardly a brand beyond, I think it was Oregon where they were based in those days. So she felt $35 was a pretty fair deal. But some years later, when it was clear that she'd chosen the wrong option or hadn't really been paid for future earnings, Phil Knight and his team did give her shares in the business worth over $1 million then. I don't know what they're worth now. And some other thank yous in the forms of diamond pendants and all sorts of things. So in the end, I think she got something out of it rather more than had been anticipated at the start of the business.
Talk to me about logos very briefly, Andy, if you would, just in terms of this most elegant simplicity of the Nike logo, the swoosh, which on the surface is the simplest and clearest symbol in sportswear anywhere. It's ubiquitous, no matter whether it's Nike golf, whether it's football, whether it's any sporting code to which they provide equipment. It's so clear who's made the equipment, what the brand is in charge, because Nike is there. They don't even need to put their name next to it. The swoosh is all-encompassing. And yet the complexity of developing that iconography is just enormous, isn't it?
You're right about not needing to put even the name Nike on the adjacent to the swoosh logo. I think it was in 1995 but they took that decision formally and said, from now on, it's just the swoosh. So it was about the time they were opening up retail outlets under the Nike Town identity. And they got to the point, and there's photographs online, you can see of these massive stores with nothing other than the swoosh outside to tell you that this is a Nike store. And that's just, that's about confidence. It's about brand consistency. It's about developing an identity that is recognizable almost immediately. And there are, you know, there are not that many companies that, that achieve that. I think you could say Apple have got that with the multicolored apple with the bite out of it, so to speak. Now, there are brands who've got that and don't need necessarily to put the name alongside, but Nike would probably be the textbook example thereof.
Ah, it's such a lovely story. And yeah, the book by Phil Knight is called Shoe Dog, and it goes down as one of history's great biographies. If you want to learn more about Nike, founded on the 1st of May 1972, read the book. You won't regret it. Your hero this week, you're lathering up on a soap, Andy.
Well, you shouldn't describe Dove as a soap in Unilever circles. They'll have you hung, drawn, and quartered because it's not a soap. But anyway, that's not the issue. The issue
is a cleansing bar. What is it?
Ah, there you go. There you go.
It's a soap.
Developed developed to allow nurses and doctors to clean the wounds of the injured from World War II and do so in a mild and gentle manner, without the irritation of some of the soaps. So that's where it comes from. There, don't say we don't learn something on this show. But anyway, bringing it right up to date, there's a URL, dove.com/detoxify. Now, Dove has is one of the stable of Unilever brands that has focused on what they call sustainable living. So it's not just about washes whiter, but does so in a way that might help the community, might help the individuals. But this is the way that purposeful brands are going. And I think that those who are skeptical and have rights to be skeptical, have the right to be skeptical, are at times confounded by a brand that just simply combines commercial success with purposeful branding. And Dove has done that. It's done it over the years with some wonderful case studies that you can find online. But this is the latest one, trying to take the toxic influence out of online sites and statements and correspondence, which seems to encourage extraordinarily toxic behavior amongst young girls because they are influenced online by remarkable amounts of pressure from people peddling these solutions that include things like baby Botox. My apologies. No, it's a campaign to enhance the status of Botox within young women, amongst other chemical peeling of the skin and all sorts of ugly sounding things like that. And they've done it with a very clever technology which allows the voice of one person to be superimposed on the face of another. And they've done that by making the mother tell the story and warn the child, because on that basis, the influence of parental advice exceeds that of online sites that, okay, that peddle the same information.
Let's have a listen to part of the advert. Oh, absolutely. Let's have a little listen to part of Baby Botox.
You know that Botox doesn't just reduce wrinkles, right? Baby Botox is amazing. You're never too young to start.
That is not me.
There are these great powders. They stop you feeling hungry so you can always skip breakfast and lunch.
And you have to treat yourself to a chemical peel. They're a total glow-up. They burn away the top layers of your skin and let new skin grow through.
Hey, Amujo. If your teeth are uneven, you can always file them down with a nail file. It's literally so simple.
File your teeth.
Don't put up with your thin lips, sweetie. Lip filler kits let you inject yourself at home. They're my total go-to.
Oh, file your teeth down with a nail file. It's not recommended.
That's hideous. but the point of the execution with this clever technological switch of voice and visual is that that advice appeared to be coming from the girls' mothers, and it's working on the basis that confusing the toxic influence of online platforms and getting the kids to believe what their mothers say as opposed to what they're learning online. So it's, as I say, the next in a series over the years of great case studies of Dove addressing the issue of natural beauty and of self-esteem in young girls. And this is absolutely worth a look online.
Wonderful. Thank you, Andy. The new Dove Self-Esteem Project. Your zero this week, however, does not get nearly that lovely treatment.
No, it's a bit of a category zero, really, but it was triggered by a television commercial I saw for Dolce & Gabbana male fragrances. And it just struck me how stereotypical the ultra-fashion market segments are, whether it's ultra-luxury, my apologies, whether it's fashion, whether it's watches, whether it's fragrances. They all seem to follow similar executional patterns with their advertising. Great big bold visuals of sultry Italian models strutting their way through luxury homes and hotels, and very little copy, great big pack shots, beautiful photography. I mean, I can't deny them that. But it just seems that in terms of territory that one brand might own more than another, there isn't such a thing because they're all crowded into the same room saying the same things. And I just wonder why someone's not saying, well, surely with photography or art direction or copy, we could break away from that model. But they don't seem to be trying. They're spending huge amounts of money. And while Dolce and Gabbana might be the fall guys for this particular observation, I think that they're not alone in this space of really quite dreary, formulaic, but expensive advertising.
Thank you, Andy Rice, our heroes and zeros this evening. Your zero, the Dolce & Gabbana commercial, and it's a whole category of these ultra-luxury products, and it's formulaic to being ludicrous. Makes you, there's no standing out in that market. And then the new Dove Self-Esteem Project, it's not a soap, but it makes you clean with water and a bit of vigorous rubbing. And the Baby Botox campaign, Andy liked very much. And then we chatted about Nike at 50. Astonishing to think that Nike is 50 years old, but it is. Phil Knight started the business in May 1972, and it is still going strong.